My guest at this time is Alireza Jafarzadeh. He is the deputy director of the Washington office of the National Council of Resistance of Iran. That is the Iranian parliament in exile. The group has been very active in warning the world about the Iranian regime's current nuclear ambitions. And we just had a conversation with Ali a few days ago talking about how Iran is cheating on the nuclear deal, to the surprise of very few who had strong suspicions about the deal in the first place. At the time of that interview, we also mentioned that the NCRI is out with a new book entitled Iran, The Rise of the Revolutionary Guard's Financial Empire, How the Supreme Leader and the IRGC Robbed the People to Fund International Terror. And for the next few minutes, we'll give you a little bit of a flavor about what the NCRI has discovered on this front. And Alireza, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to be on your shows, Greg.
Thank you, sir. It's good to have you with us. So let's start, first of all, with a brief explanation of the health of the Iranian economy, or perhaps the lack of health of the Iranian economy. There was a lot of speculation that sanctions imposed by the United States, other Western nations, the UN, were really taking its toll. And now that those sanctions have largely been lifted, that Iran's economy can get going again, including business with Western countries. This book concludes that that assumption is not necessarily accurate. Explain why.
Absolutely, Greg. The reason that's not accurate is because of the nature of the Iranian economy. If you were talking about a healthy economy in any part of the world, that assumption would be true. But in the case of Iran, the bottom line is that the Iranian economy is pretty much entirely controlled by the Supreme Leader and the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. And the way they managed to do that is that back in 2005, the Supreme Leader basically brought this whole plan, this nice-looking plan called privatization, that, you know, turning everything into the private sector. But in fact, that was really restructuring the Iranian economy to give the ownership of a wide range of industries and institutions to those either associated directly with the Supreme Leader or with the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. So in a matter of a few years, what the Supreme Leader did, they basically seized the state-owned firms and corporations. They also took control of the financial market. And by eliminating the public subsidies, they took away money from the Iranian population. And in a matter of 4 years, they transferred 80% of the economic enterprises of the owned by the government into the so-called non-governmental public, which was none other than the commanders of the Revolutionary Guards, who were now running all of these, you know, large corporations without paying any taxes. So just to give you an idea of what was really seized and turned over to the Revolutionary Guards and the Supreme Leader's control, where we're talking about like large mines, the, you know, major, you know, primary industries, including downstream oil and gas industry, the power generation, you know, foreign commerce, banks, you know, insurance, roads, railroads, airlines, shipping companies, food companies, agriculture, you name it. And in the first 4 years, about $12 billion were transferred, and that thing continued even after 2008. And right now we're talking about 14 major powerhouses that are controlling the entire economy, and all these 14 are either entirely controlled and owned by the Supreme Leader or by the Iranian Revolutionary Guards. Just give you an example. One of them is called the headquarters for executing the order of Khomeini, and the abbreviation called Setad. It has the resources of roughly about $90 billion. I mean, that by itself would put Supreme Leader Khomeini on the Forbes, you know, richest people. He would be on top of the list, not to mention all the other organizations and entities that they're controlling. So that's why, in other words, There is no private sector in Iran, and over 50% of the GDP is controlled by the IRGC and the supreme leader. So whoever at the end of the day is doing business with Iran is actually not flourishing the Iranian economy. Rather, they're doing business with the IRGC and the supreme leader.
Ali Reza, obviously transparency is not one of the hallmarks of this regime, but as you chronicle the government seizing this property, seizing these businesses, and centralizing them, how does that compare to the intensity of the advancement of the nuclear program? Do they line up pretty well, or is it hard to tell?
Well, they do line up pretty well because, you know, the question is, what was really the whole purpose of doing all of that other than, of course, you know, getting wealthier and richer and you know, filling their own pockets? But the supreme leader really had an agenda because he wanted to have a free hand without any kind of, you know, monitoring or anything like that and enough resources to do several things. A, in terms of their nuclear weapons program, to have enough resources with no accountability. No one would know, like, how much money they're spending, where the money is coming from. And also in terms of funding terrorism in, you know, Syria, in Yemen, in Lebanon, in Iraq, and other countries. So in addition to the official budget of the government, which is, you know, made public, which by itself is really very high because the official budget, roughly about anywhere between 30 to 35% of the budget is allocated to what they call, you know, defense-related issues. But on top of all of that, the money they make out of these, you know, the economy, running the economy, is directly funneled through these programs, including the nuclear weapons program, which you mentioned. All of the things, the benefits they were getting from, you know, overseas, making these front companies to cut a deal with a number of countries in the world, getting the expertise, parts, equipment, all of that under different covers. This system, this kind of economic system under their control, actually gave them a lot more access and freedom to operate without being being detected. And that's why it's even more important, understanding the way the economy works, it's even more important to have really very, very strong, stringent scrutiny of their program rather than laxing it.
Ali Reza, you mentioned the $90 billion that could make the supreme leader at the very top of the Forbes 400 list. But what's the total amount of money that has been seized here and a large portion of which might be funneled towards certainly the military and possibly the nuclear weapons program?
Well, it's hard to tell what the total number is, but, you know, we're definitely talking about, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. That $90 billion is just only one of those 14 powerhouses known as Setad. And they basically seized properties from people, you know, even some people who were just living in their own buildings. They took it over under the excuse that the government, based on the Constitution, has the right to seize and confiscate property if that property is obtained through what they call illegitimate means. And illegitimate means is something they can define any way they want to do. So that just gives them, like, you know, absolute power in doing it. The other one, for instance, one of the other, you know, some of the other 14 conglomerates is what they call Mostazafan Foundation, which means oppressed. And it's supposed to be like a religious foundation to help the poor, but it has turned into a foundation that actually funds terror in Lebanon. Another foundation like MDOT Committee, which is like means aid. Again, that is sending a lot of money to Lebanon to support Hezbollah there. And the money doesn't end up helping the poor in Iran. As you may know, the majority of the Iranian population live below the poverty line, whereas these, you know, small group of clerics and these Revolutionary Guards commanders own much of the resources of the country. You have a lot of, you know, poor areas in the country, in the shanty houses, even people living in graves at night because they have no place to go, yet the Ayatollahs own and control these huge multi-billion dollar corporations and industries.
couple of quick questions before we let you go, Ali Reza. First of all, you've documented the paper trail of this financial effort on the part of the Supreme Leader and the IRGC. Do you believe the paper trail is strong enough to go to the UN with, and do you think the UN would do much with it?
I think we feel that the paper trail is very strong and strong enough to go that far. But I would start right here in the United States with the U.S. government, the State Department, basically designating the IRGC as a foreign terrorist organization. Because by designating the IRGC as a foreign terrorist organization, they can really close all of these loopholes. It will make it illegal for any U.S. person or U.S. entity to deal with any of these institutions, organizations run by the IRGC or associated with them. It would make life a lot more difficult for the IRGC to transfer funds, to do all kinds of things they're doing in the region. And then I think it would be a good foundation to build a case at the United Nations to come up with stronger multinational pressure on the Iran regime at the UN level.
And finally, sir, you mentioned the desperate straits for a lot of the Iranian people. In the book, you write this, or the NCRI writes this: second, the disastrous economic situation is the most enduring long-term source for social discontent. It is a major source of instability for the regime at home, casting a long shadow of uncertainty over its future. We know that back in 2009, about 8 years ago, there was an uprising more over political issues than poverty, although that may have been a factor as well. And ultimately, the rebellion was crushed in part because no one from the outside seemed to offer much support for the rebellion. So what's the attitude of the Iranian people now? Are the times so desperate that you think there will be another uprising, or are they convinced that if they do, it's going to end very similarly to the last one?
Well, that's a great point you raise, Greg, because, in addition to what you saw, the whole world saw back in 2009, that millions of people were in the streets of Tehran and other cities calling for the fall of the Ayatollahs. They wanted to end this regime in its entirety. They didn't want to deal with the so-called moderates versus radicals. They wanted the entire clerical regime out. And what we need to understand now is that in addition to the intellectuals, the students, and the people in large cities who were opposed to the regime, now that discontent of the population has expanded in the poorest areas of the country, a lot of the workers and people who feel that their resources, their funds are stolen by the mullahs, a lot of these corporations that are run by the Revolutionary Guards and the Supreme Leader agents are facing a lot of protests and demonstrations by locals. Over the past year, we had over 6,000 anti-government demonstrations, protest acts, a lot of them economically driven to begin with, but they quickly turned into political slogans by the people who hold the rulers as those, the big thieves who are plundering their resources. So if people thought that, things were volatile in 2009, it's even more volatile now. And there is certainly a great prospect for change. And that's why I think it's so important for the United States to take the right side, do the right thing, build up pressure on the Iran regime, send a message to the people of Iran that the United States is standing on their side, not on the side of the ruthless rulers of Iran, and show sympathy, show political understanding with the organized opposition in Iran, with those who are voicing their protests against the Iran regime in any how they can, by condemning these violations of human rights, by making political statements, building relationship with the Iranian opposition, and they know how to do it. If there is a political will to build a political relationship with the people of Iran, considering the people of Iran as the real partners for the United States, not these ayatollahs, then you will see a big change.
Ali Reza, we've certainly seen it before where the people are the casualties in the face of a repressive government going for a major military buildup. We see it in North Korea, of course, and other places currently and throughout history. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Ali Reza Jafarzadeh is the deputy director in the Washington office of the National Council of Resistance of Iran. The new book, Iran, The Rise of the Revolutionary Guards Financial Empire, How the Supreme Leader and the IRGC Robbed the People to Fund International Terror. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.